Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Heart Grapevine. On Totally Driven Radio Network, this is Magic Mike, and right now, we are going to go and we're going to get Mr. Smith Hart on the line, and let's drum him up right now. And we are calling Smith Hart right now from the Hart Grapevine. Hello, Smith. Are you there? We got to try this again, ladies and gentlemen. We are trying to reach Smith Hart. I tell you what, we are going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back with the legendary Smith Hart family. Hold on.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long way. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back, and now we are joined by Mr. Smith Hart. Smith, are you there?
Yep. I am here this time. Sorry about the technical screw-up there, but I guess we'll blame Wind Mobile for that.
Yes, and I checked everything, and we sound good. I checked the sound, and everything is good. So first off, I just wanted to tell you thank you for everything that you said last week about my dad. That's number one. And number two, I want to tell you, I heard the show last week with your son, and you guys did a very good job. I loved the show. Very entertaining show.
Oh, thank you very much. My other son, Matthew, I got three sons, Chad, Matthew, Mike, but he wrestled Magnus on Sunday and had a pretty good match for a 12-minute match, and he lost, but, you know, Magnus is a very technical wrestler, and he's had lots of experience wrestling big guys, and Matthew's not that big yet, but he's coming along, and it was a good match, I thought. And they had a pretty good crowd, too. They had probably 300 people, which is good for the considering everything. They had four independent wrestling shows all in 1 month, two on two Fridays, you know, opposite each other. And then they had one on Friday again a week later, and then on Sunday. So they weren't too far apart either. And, you know, I didn't go. I only went to two of the shows, and they both drew fairly well. So that's good for them.
Well, that's important, and that's good that you went to see your son wrestle, and I'm glad, you know, he did good. Even though he didn't win, sometimes it's not about winning. It's about getting your positioning down.
That's right. It's like you can win and stink, and you can lose and look good. So, I mean, and that's sort of the art of a lot of wrestlers, to make the other guy look good. If you beat a guy too quickly and too readily, maybe you're beating nothing. You're beating a piece of shit or a doormat. So my philosophy is to try and, you know, you make yourself look good by helping everybody else that you wrestle.
Well, you know, I want to talk to you. I heard a couple of things today. I've been hearing rumbling about TNA, and I've been hearing a possible Vince McMahon might be buying the company.
Oh, really? How fucked would that be? You know,
what'd you say? Sorry. How what would it be?
How fucked?
Oh, well, I mean, you know what would happen if Vince bought the company? It'd be another video on the network. We'd have TNA
right
next to.
That's right. Exactly.
I tell you what, if and this is the God's honest truth, if Billy Corgan would be able to purchase this thing, we wouldn't be having these discussions.
No, but he's a bit, I'm not sure what he wants. I didn't really get into that kind of talk with him, but I think he liked some of my ideas. But he told me his hands are tied, and I don't know if they're untied now or if it's a kind of a suggestion that he, bought into the company or anything, or if it's true, you never know what to believe. But even nowadays, but if he has any say in the matter, I don't think he'll want to sell to Vince. I don't believe he's wants to. If he's got controlling interest, which I heard he had 51% or some such thing, I would think that's the kiss of death to sell out to the WWE. He doesn't like that style. I know he doesn't like it, and unless there's a huge profit in it and he just wants to make some quick money, which doesn't make sense. Vince wouldn't do that. Vince would have just bought it before Billy if he really wanted to, you know. So I don't know.
Today I read something, and I'll read it. It says, as we noted earlier today, this is from the Wrestling Observer Radio, WWE is reportedly back in play regarding the potential purchase of TNA, and time is apparently running out for a sale deal to get done. PW Insiders now reporting sources have noted WWE is back in the mix and had talks regarding the purchase of TNA for about the past 5 days. There's still a chance that Billy Corgan can make a deal happen, but PW Insider believes the fuse on the TNA bomb is close to an end. The report adds something or someone is going to have to give up soon, and there's no avoiding it. And then it says, as noted, it should be a very interesting week for TNA as they head into Bound for Glory. Now, here's another thing that I read today. Supposedly, Triple H wants Matt Hardy to come back.
I don't know why that would be.
Because he wants...
I think the Hardy boys are great talent, but I don't know why Triple H wants him particularly. I just don't know. There might be some reason, you know.
The reason why Triple H wants him back is because of his style and how he changed his whole, you know, his character. So that's what was said today. That's what I read today. So again, you never know what you read in these, like they say, dirt sheets. But you never know. So, some of them are, you know, some of them could be true, and some of them could be false.
Yeah.
But anyway, how's your health doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. I feel as good as ever, and so, you know, touch wood, because it's a learning experience with this. You sometimes come down with something and you don't know why. You get a whole different reason for the same symptoms as you got the last time you had the similar thing. So, you know, but I'm feeling very good. Thanks for asking. And
of course, you know, of course, you know, and it's a, and it's true. You know what I wanted to talk to you about too, while we're together. Today was, it actually was brought up today on my podcast, and it was about some controversy regarding your Facebook and regarding what was written about Seth Rollins on there. People really need to get a life. You know, you are my friend, as I say, and to think that you were being attacked because you had an opinion on Seth Rollins. It was your opinion. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't even care. My opinions don't necessarily coincide with everybody else's, but they shouldn't be bringing my poor late brother Owen into the picture. Anybody in my family, if you want to talk about me, that's fine. I'm certainly not jealous of any wrestler in the business. It certainly wouldn't be Seth Rollins if there was anybody. I mean, there's lots I admire, lots of people I admire. A lot of them are dead now, but I mean, I have a guy that handles a lot of my Facebook responsibilities because I get so much, I have so many people calling me, and 99% of the time he'll check with me before he puts it out, you know, I'll go over it with him and say, no, this, yeah, that, and change this, and I'll correct everything from his grammar to his word usage and all that. And then sometimes he'll slip something in that he claims he didn't hear me change, or, you know, he likes to get his own opinion in sometimes. But basically, 99% of the time, it's my views and pretty much my words. He might say some of the stuff is his idea. He might come up with something, so I didn't know that. And I'd say, well, plug that, or wish the guy a happy birthday, or, go with it or deny it or whatever. But, you know, it's pretty much my thoughts.
This particular topic, as you said, ruffled a few feathers, and it stirred quite the topic. And the topic was about Seth Rollins. Is he unsafe to work with? Guys are getting hurt working with him.
He can be, obviously he's proven he can be unsafe to work with, and I don't know whether it's deliberate, or I'm sure it's not deliberate actually, but whether it's accidental or otherwise, other wrestlers should take heed and be aware of him, basically, like, you know, put your guard up when you're wrestling him. And he should try and straighten his act out a bit, where he doesn't do stupid holds that are high risk, or he knows what's dangerous and what isn't. And a lot of these young guys want to do anything that they're told, that they're asked to do, because they want to prove themselves. And
now, sticking with this topic now, and of course, I had wrote a comment on there, and this is something that I heard. I heard it from a couple of wrestlers. I heard it from Sting, and I heard it from Finn Balor. They say that it was their fault. They landed wrong. First of all, the spot that they got hurt on, they weren't taking a flat bump. most of the guys, when they take a bump, it's a flat bump. When they take these turnbuckle, and I think the WWE should look into it. Maybe he should change his turnbuckle powerbomb. If he can't do it the right way, maybe he should change it. And you, my friend, are 100% right. They should have never brought your family in it. They should have never, you know, said anything stupid. You know, if they're fans of Seth Rollins, they would channel it in a different way. I mean, it's your prerogative and it's their prerogative. But once they start talking about your family, it's like it really annoyed me. And you know, and your brother Owens, you know, your brother Owen was an accident. I mean, it wasn't done deliberately. People think that it was done deliberately. It wasn't done deliberately. So I mean, and that's the whole key. And of course, your brother Brett spoke about it too. I heard him on a podcast.
Yeah, Brett speaks about it. Brett is pretty much an authority. You know, if Brett finds fault with it, then there's fault. I mean, I'm secondary to Brett.
I listened to Brett. I heard his commentary. You know, I heard the whole thing. You know, and that's another thing. You want to talk about guys getting hurt. Your brother Brett got hurt. We talked about it. Your brother Brett got kicked in the head by Goldberg. And that was a totally unsafe work environment. So and once these guys get hit in the head and they get hurt and they get injured by the same guy over and over and over, it becomes maybe it's the guy or maybe it's the move the guy is doing. And you know, I mean that's the whole picture. But you know, and nonetheless, like I said, you had an opinion about Seth Rollins. You gave your opinion on it on Facebook.
Yeah, I generally you know, try to give any worker the benefit of the doubt, but when there's, you know, multiple injuries that many that soon, you know, you have to kind of, you know, take issue and, you know, make a point about it, which is all I did. You know, I didn't mean to shit on Seth Rollins.
You didn't shit on Seth Rollins. You were just trying to, you know, give your opinion on the situation. You know, nobody, and especially you. I mean, you've trained wrestlers, right? Correct?
Absolutely, I have.
So
the first thing I teach them is safety, is how to protect yourself when you fall. That's the first thing I teach them. And I tell them a lot of things as well, like, you know, you respect your wrestlers. Fellow wrestler, he's giving you his body, you're giving him your body, and between the two of you, you can't be too stupid. You gotta, you know, do logical moves that are you're comfortable with. Some guys can, you know, do certain things, and other guys are not meant to. You know, if you're 500 pounds, you're not gonna be doing flying head scissors too often. And you know, if you're 120 pounds,
I just laughed at some of the idiots that were saying you profited off of a DVD. You know, you profited off your family's legacy. That's not true. You put in your dues.
That's absolutely, I did. I still am.
Well, yeah, that's right. This is the Heart Grapevine episode number 17. It's just me and Smith, and we're just shooting the shit, as Smith would say, and we're talking about, you know, different topics and, you know, it's, you know, some stuff that I'm reading in the news or that I heard, you know, and let me ask you a question. It's a WWE related question. It contains Monday Night Raw. They're saying that Monday Night Raw last night, it was their lowest viewership. Now, was that because of it was up against a presidential debate?
It could be, you know, because I watched the presidential debate. I was watching the Sting movie repeat, you know, but it's a great movie. Robert Redford and Paul Newman, the Sting. And when the presidential debate came on, I forced myself to watch the whole lousy thing. I'm an American as well as a Canadian, and I'm, you know, very concerned about the choices here. And I like a bit of what Donald Trump says, but I don't think he's the man. And I think Hillary Clinton, I had a lot of respect for her husband as a politician and a doer of good. And the Monica Lewinsky thing didn't mean shit to me. You know, the poor guy's married to a dyke, so no wonder she didn't, you know, she's kind of taking issue with Trump when he knocks, what's her name, Rosie McDonald. But all, you know, I'm a Democrat, basically, and I don't care who knows it. And I like Trump on some days, but basically he's not a good politician. He might be a good, you know, businessman like most of these big boys. They get away with all the, they get all the benefits, and they don't pay taxes to any degree and all that. So, you know, Hillary's the better candidate, I think, by far. But I chose to watch that. So your question about the Raw last night, I didn't see it. I usually don't see it here where I'm staying. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, you were saying that last time on my show. By the way, they said that the viewership dropped down. They said that it says this week's episode of Monday Night Raw garnered an average viewing of like 2,478,000 viewers on the USA Network. That's down again from the week prior. This time, an average, they lost a lot. And then it tells you what they did in hour one and number two and number three. Now, my 2 points. Number one, most people probably don't know this. I mean, unless you're a wrestling fan like me, and you know this. In 2013, they put Donald Trump in the WWE Hall of Fame, and I think he got the most boos out of any Hall of Famer, celebrity Hall of Famer, that went in the Hall of Fame.
I'm surprised wrestling fans are booing him, you know, because they don't really, they're not all that political usually, you know, they're not hardcore, you know, I don't even know if they vote, but I mean, hopefully some of them do, but that just does show you, though, that Trump is not a popular man. A lot of people resent his kind of his shortcut to riches. And I think Hillary has earned, she put in her time and all that. She might have screwed up on that email bullshit, but I mean, I think it was anything really serious. They would have said a lot more about it.
Yeah, I think if they had found some kind of crime committed in her emails or something, I think she would have been, you know, this wouldn't have never been happening. She would have been in scrutiny.
No,
I don't
say that Donald Trump is a piece of shit. I do say that George Bush Jr. is, and probably his father. And most of his goddamn, his whole, everybody in that, like Condoleezza Rice and Wolfowitz and Gonzalez and all those judges and, I don't forget the other one's name. They're all Nixon boys anyway. They're about as slimy as you can get. They make Trump look squeaky clean.
Yeah, you know, it's a whole different platform today. Especially when it comes to politics. The only thing that I like about Donald Trump is the McMahon Donald Trump connection with the WrestleMania 4 and WrestleMania 5. I mean, imagine, you know, the convention center, the whole setup for WrestleMania. They made that like one of the best things going with WrestleMania 4 and 5. I mean, they really packed out that place, and I mean, you know, Owen got to wrestle as the Blue Blazer against Mr. Perfect, And your brother Brett and the Anvil got to wrestle on, it was five. I know they wrestled, and they wrestled in four, too. They wrestled in a battle royal, which was won by a guy that you know very well. Bad News, it was Bad News Allen, and, well, Bad News Brown. Bad News Allen wrestled for you for Stampede Wrestling.
Yeah.
What was your thoughts on Bad News Allen? May he rest in peace.
I wrestle Bad News occasionally. He's okay. You know, the poor guy's dead now. I found he wasn't all that, you know, making the other guy look good wasn't really part of his scheme. he basically just go out there and, you know, bowl you over if he could. And, you know, a lot of things he didn't want to do, you know. You know, he had hemophilia, so you can understand why he's not a, you know, and doesn't want to be bleeding. But I found that he didn't take the extra step for the business or for his opponent. But on the other hand, he was a friend, and I knew some of his family. And he married a girl from Edmonton, not far from here, and had a child by her. And Helen, her name was, nice girl. Good man. And, you know, my dad always got along well with Bad News, but he was a bit temperamental and a little bit hard to deal with. He wasn't your first choice for, you know, a matchmaker or a booker, but, you know, I respect him as a genuine Olympic medalist and an athlete, a big heavyweight judo man. That's, you know, he's done his thing going to the Olympics. He deserves a lot of credit for that.
I remember when he came into the WWF at the time, and he was considered a loner. And then, of course, I had gone to a match back in 88, and it was your brother Brett versus Bad News, when they had those, when they used to take it to the, you know, double count out, or they used to go to the time limit. And back then it was basically to see, I guess, who they would cheer more. And, you know, even though your brother Brett was a heel at the time, Bad News Brown was a heel at the time, people hated Bad News Brown, and they wanted to see him get his butt kicked. And that's the type, that's how they would do it, you know, heel versus heel, and they would see who would become the face. And then, of course, your brother became a face, you know, wrestling against Bad News. But they had some good matches.
Yeah, well, they should have. They had a few in Calgary already, and Brett's wrestles a very universal style, you know, and he can kind of form, he can work in with anybody, basically. Bad News couldn't, but, you know,
but your brother Brett is altogether
different. Yeah, he's
different.
From a different mold altogether, you know.
Actually, today on my podcast, we were talking about great wrestlers, and someone asked me about Hulk Hogan. And I said I thought Hulk Hogan was right for the time, but he wasn't great. And I said in my mind, I said the greatest wrestler for WWE or F was Brett. And I'll stick by that, and I'll stand by that. I thought that Brett was the greatest.
Yeah,
wrestler.
I can't disagree. I think Owen could have surpassed usurped Brett if he had not been killed. And there's a lot of guys there that were damn good. Like, I didn't see much wrong with Curt Hennig's work, and Cowboy Orton's work. He was pretty damn good. And
Curt Hennig was a good technical and a great wrestler, and he knew how to put a match on, and he knew how to work, and he knew how to work. And that's another thing. When Brett wrestled Mr. Perfect, it was like, wow, these two are locking up, and you know, these two come from
some of them, like Davey and Dynamite. Davey, Dynamite, Brett, Owen, you know, Hennig. Orton. There's a few others. I can't just think of their names offhand, but they were really good, entertaining wrestlers. Don Morocco was pretty good. I just can't think of all the rest of them, but you know, some of the newer ones that, I thought that Alberto Del Rio was pretty damn good. I liked him. And
Alberto Del Rio is a good hand, but now he's done with the WWE, it looks like. So it looks like Alberto's done again. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the newer guys that I like today, and I'm not talking about promo work. I like Cesaro. I think Cesaro got better when they paired him up with Tyson Kidd.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Because I think Tyson is a hell of a worker, and I think that Tyson's a hell of a person as well. I watched TJ on Total Divas. I know it's a show, but I watch him, and I watch his emotions, and he seems to be a very passionate guy about wrestling, and he knows his stuff, and he's a good enough worker, and that's why they put Cesaro with him, because they figured he could help Cesaro out. And then they put Natty with them, and Natty was perfect for them. So to me, when you want to talk about workers then and today, Tyson Kidd definitely deserves a nod.
Yeah.
And Cesaro.
Yeah,
Cesaro,
Tyson,
is good.
Yeah, he's a great kid. I felt so bad when he broke his neck, you know. I mean,
yeah.
I thought that he'll ever wrestle again. But he had... you know, good potential, and he was well trained, and he was a nice kid. He was diligent, good, you know, husband and friend. And I can't say anything bad about him. He was a good student.
Him and Natalya have been going together for years. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I'll let you in on something. I'll let you in on something else that I know. I was at his first match back in New Jersey. In 2013, when Tyson Kidd came back, he wrestled Heath Slater, and Tyson did very good for himself.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, but the wrestlers today, the injuries, you know, we talked about a lot about the injuries, and we talked about a lot about the wrestlers and what their bodies go through and all this stuff. But you realize, Today's wrestling, again, you lived through the Stampede style of wrestling. I believe, I don't know if I'm right, but I heard that Stampede Wrestling, they had the first ladder match ever.
That's true. Yeah, I know that's true.
So,
and WF acknowledges that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I heard stuff about it, and I heard, you know, I heard some great things about Stampede. But when I first started watching the Stampede, when it first came available to me, I remember watching the wrestlers, and I said, "Oh my goodness, this is before this guy was even, you know, this was before this guy was even here in the WWF at the time," To me, that's something. When you make it to the WWE or F, it's like you made it to the big time. But you have to know how to wrestle, and there's places that people have wrestled, and 95% of the wrestlers today that we know, they wrestled and they came from, and they were trained by your father.
Yeah, there's quite a few that he broke in, and not all of them were tortured, you know, mauled in the gym either. A lot of them just worked. They were strictly workers, you might say. They weren't shooters or anything, but they. Billy Graham, Superstar, was one. Don, what's his name? Ivan Koloff, another one we broke in. He wrestled maybe down in Montreal shortly before he came to Calgary. Basically, he learned all his wrestling in Calgary. And wasn't too long before he went to WWF, but he beat Bruno. He should be a Hall of Famer, a guy like that. The big guy, Nikolai Volkov. His real name is Joe Perusovic. He was a split Croatian refugee. He was like 16 years old when he came to Calgary, and even then he was a powerlifting champion of Croatia. And Iron Sheik, his partner, they both broke into Calgary, and they went to, you know, wow. Both Billy Graham and Khosrow Masiri. The Sheik went to Bern Gagne's before they got selected by Vince McMahon Sr. But some of those other guys, Stan Stasiak, he hadn't really worked a lot. He was one of their champions. He did most of his best work for Don Owens and my dad. He wrestled in the Maritimes in Montreal and, you know, Quebec, where he's from. Probably worked on a lot of Toronto shows after he got to WWF back then. But
Stan the Man had the heart punch. He had the heart punch.
That's right. He developed that in Calgary. Primarily wow. against Lucid Lindsay. He had some great matches against Lucid Lindsay. Lucid Lindsay's a top guy. He died young, but Lucid, pound for pound, was one of the toughest guys ever to step in the ring. Legitimately tough.
If you guys have joined us, this is the Heart Grapevine episode number 17. I'm Mike Ferrara, and I'm joined, of course, by the host. Of course, it would be Smith Hart, and we're talking about Stampede Wrestling. We're going back into memory.
To know that I had Carl LeDuc and his father Paul LeDuc scheduled, and then I was told that Ahmed Johnson was ready to go, so I called the LeDucs and I bumped them for a week or two. I said whenever, the sooner the better. But I got somebody today, and I want to. It was suggested I have all three on. I said, no, I don't. I want to have LeDuc separately because there's so much history there. And
right.
Then Ahmed Johnson, went south or something. So too bad. You know, I would love to have talked to him, but maybe another time.
Ahmed, did you have a connection with Ahmed Johnson?
My connection is with some guy named Bobby, and I don't know who Bobby is, but Ahmed knows
did you know Ahmed, or that's your connect? Is that your connection? I got you.
Bobby was the connection. Ahmed, I wouldn't know how to reach Ahmed. I met Ahmed.
I wouldn't either. But anyway, you know, I mean, I'm sure Ahmed would have been great, but. Well, we're doing good.
Yeah.
We're doing good just the way it is. You know, I'm a good guest too, you know.
Yeah, you are. You ask good questions.
I enjoy picking your brain about wrestling. I mean, you know, this is, like I always say, this is my life. Wrestling, I dedicated my life to wrestling because it was something that I always found. I mean, you know, one day there was a guy, and he's reading a book next to me, and he says, what are you reading? You know, and I turned around and I said, I'm reading a book about Lex Luger. You know, Lex Luger wrote a book. This was recently.
Yeah.
And my friend said, well, I'm reading War and Peace. And to me, I said, the books that I read every wrestling book out there because that's what I love. I love to read about wrestling. And when I read Lex Luger's book and I spoke to Lex about his book, and I, you know, we talked about it. He told me the stuff that he wrote in his book was 100% true, he said. So I said, thank you for telling me that, because it's something that I wanted to know.
Well,
you know, when I go and I meet a wrestler, the first thing I do is I hand him my book. Hacksaw Jim Duggan, I met him, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan said to me, hey, Mike. I said, yeah, Hacksaw. He said, are you a real wrestling fan? Are you a knowledgeable wrestling fan? I said, yes, I am. He said, who won the first Royal Rumble? I said, you did. And he said, that's right.
Yeah.
And then I bumped into Hillbilly Jim as well. And Hillbilly Jim said to me, Smitty and I are good friends. He says, I used to stay at Smith's house.
That's right.
Hillbilly Jim told me that. He used to stay at your house.
Yeah, I like Hillbilly Jim. He's a great guy.
Well, did Hillbilly wrestle with Harley Davidson back in the day?
Did Harley say that again?
What did Hillbilly Jim wrestle back then? He was known as Harley Davidson, wasn't he?
No, he came in. Well, he might have been. He came in as Hillbilly Jim, and that's all I ever knew him as, Hillbilly Jim as a wrestler.
Yeah, because I was wondering. I know he wrestled as Harley Davidson too a couple of times, and I think he was given the name Hillbilly Jim when he went down to the WWF. I mean, I could be wrong.
No.
I'm not, 100%.
No, he was Hillbilly Jim when he came to Calgary before WWF.
Okay.
That's all he ever was for us was Hillbilly Jim, and that was quite a long time before he went to WWF.
So how did he end up staying in your house?
He was just green learning the business, and he wasn't making any money. And I said, I got a place you can stay at, so go for it. Like my dad would have done the same thing. And it's like when Jim Neidhart came, he was making $75 a week, and we were feeding him and stuff. He stayed with me for a while, and then he ended up moving in with my dad, and got friendly with my sister, and the rest is all history.
I love
three beautiful daughters.
I love the story. I love the story about that your sister Ellie told about Jim. And it's just a fun. And your brother Brett told a funny story in his book about how Jim and Ellie got together, and how Jim used to stick his fingers up a cat's butt.
I'm not sure, but some of these things get a little bit lost in the translation. Some of the details get a little bit overspiced and stuff, but. I don't know. I don't think Jim's ever violated a cat or anybody in my family in laws or otherwise.
That's what I read in his book. I mean, again, maybe you're right. Maybe it get lost in translation.
I'll read you the book.
But
I read all Brett's books too.
I tell you about Jim though. Jim the Anvil Neidhart was one of the best wrestlers that could throw a drop kick. He was good.
Yeah, he's a good athlete for his size. He weighed about 305 pounds one time when,
wow.
Now I think he's exceeded that now in retirement, but like he's 350 right now and he shouldn't be that heavy. But, when he came to Calgary, he was about 295 and he told me he was up to 315 not too long before that. That's
wow.
Really stocky for a guy who's 5'10", 5'11". But he was bench pressing 595 pounds. He probably could have hit 600 if he really pushed it hard. But another 5 pounds is not much of a percentage more. But he was incredibly strong all the way around, and he was fast for a guy that big. He was very – he had a lot of white blood corpuscles or something, which could be speed, or maybe it's the red ones. I don't know. But he knew all about that stuff. He was an all-around athlete. He played football, baseball. She was in track and field, the shot put, and, wrestling, of course, and weightlifting. And probably could have done anything. He's very quick, good agile. He's very had good hand and eye coordination. But,
the best thing that the WWF ever did was put your brother Brett and Jim together, because they were just a natural dynamic team. They can have a match with anybody, the Killer Bees, the Dynamite Kid, of course, the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy and Dynamite, Demolition. They had some great tag team matches.
Yeah,
with the
Jim had great partners. When he finished with Brett, they gave him Owen, and then he had Davey Boy also. I mean, you can't get better partners than Jim.
No.
I mean, Jim and Brett, and Owen and Davey Boy and Brett teamed up with a guy like Neidhart, the powerhouse, with those other guys who were very agile and a lot of wrestling.
And the flip, the
knowledge
shot, too.
Brett could do all the fancy stuff. Jim would do the clobbering and the, you know, standing there, the immovable object.
The excellence of execution, as Gorilla Monsoon gave the title to your brother, and it became one of his trademarks. And of course, Jim. I mean, Jim with the discus that Natalie still uses. I love that discus clothesline. Natalia still uses it today, and it's one of my favorite moves that she does in her repertoire. And of course, you know, again, we're talking about your brother and your brother-in-law, and then, of course, to go on to have a partner with Owen and then a partner with Davey Boy. And then, you know, and then, of course, they all make that bad mistake when they went to WCW and they weren't really used correctly. But WWF, they did good in there. And again, the fans, you know, any time the fans like you, they're going to get a hold of you. And they really admired Jim because there was something about Jim and Owen, you know, and even Brian Pillman. They loved these guys. They said, you know, the Hart Foundation together was one of the greatest groups around.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I mean, it was a big deal. I mean, you know, and of course we're coming up to the anniversary of the death of Brian Pillman, and, you know, Do you have any good Brian Pillman funny stories?
Well, one day after a party at my dad's house, Pillman was looking for some after-hours fun and some party favors, let's say, and we're not necessarily talking cannabis, but anyway.
I gotcha.
I directed him down to a strip joint, and all of a sudden we're in I'm driving, and I'm in a car that has no left signal light, and I know it, and there's a cop behind me, and I really wanted to go straight, but anyway, something made me say, well, no, they shouldn't be really that worried. I turned without signaling, and he pulled me right over, and first thing Pillman says is, they don't have dogs, do they? You know, like it's the dog sniffing because he'd already scored his party favor for the night. But anyway, I went to jail for an outstanding warrant. Pillman had to take my car home. I think it was probably one of my dad's. And I didn't even see him. I was going to go to Edmonton the next day and see Pat Patterson and Stephanie McMahon at the time, because I didn't see them the Friday night, and they had the double show, Calgary Friday and Edmonton Saturday. I spent the day in jail. I couldn't get bailed out till somebody got back from Edmonton. My dad bailed me out, and I couldn't, don't even answer the phone at home. You know, half of them went to Edmonton, and that was, I think, the same year that they had the thing with in the corral in the Saddle Dome here in Calgary, where we all stormed the ring, and it was one of the Road Warriors and Steve Austin and all these other guys again. You know, it's a cage match or some damn thing. And all I know is I had to spend the night in jail when I was going to go out and party with Brian. But it was just funny. As soon as he wasn't worried about the cops except for guard sniffing dogs and all that. But anyway,
that's a funny story. Brian Pillman was a good, you know, another good talent that got over with the loose cannon situation. And for those of you who probably don't remember this, but if you go back to the WWE and the times, you know, WWE was becoming more edgy. And there was a storyline where Steve Austin broke into Brian Pillman's house. And Brian Pillman had, what he said, a Smith & Wesson. And then the next thing you know, the satellite feed cuts out just as it looked like, you know, Brian was going to shoot Steve Austin with the gun. It was just one of those things. What were your thoughts on that segment?
No, I think Brian played the role very well of being a total loose cannon. You know, he could certainly play that role very well. And, you know, he and I were going out to do a anti-drug speech at the, one of the Indian reserves, the Sarsi Reserve in Calgary, Siksika Nation. And all the way there, Pilma and I were smoking pot, and we probably looked like it. And he's in there just blasting these Indians about drinking and smoking drugs and doing all kinds of other stuff. And meanwhile, he's like, you know, high as a kite. And then he singled out a few little Indians and dragged them up on the stage, you know, on the platform, and told them what they could do with themselves if they straightened out and stopped drinking and all that. None of them said they didn't drink. These are young kids. But they probably right. did drink whatever they get their hands on, but they didn't deny their liquor use. Filman had no idea if they drank or not. He was just telling them, and he even got into a little homosexuality stuff. He was pretending to be very homophobic, which he could pretend pretty good, but I don't think he cared one way or the other. He didn't bother him. No, he was never molested or jilted or anything by another man or anything, but he did, you know, I was telling him as he went along, I said, why don't you grab those two or three guys right there, they look kind of funny, and drag them up here and give them the reason the riot act, and he did, and that was all fun. It was all just in good fun.
Yeah, those are good. Those are good stories. I mean, I unfortunately remember the day. Actually, it was my sister's birthday, and my sister, this year her birthday's coming up. It's October the 5th, and I remember that day when I turned on the WWF pay per view, and they announced that Brian Pillman was found dead. It was just a sad situation. You know, for people that don't know, Brian Pillman had a lot of neck problems and a lot of surgeries when he was a little boy. And
that's right. He had cancer, throat cancer. And that's why he had that high voice, that sort of scratchy voice.
Wow.
He had a tracheotomy, you know, but the hole closed up, as they often do. But he had pretty muscular neck. He must have had a 20-inch neck, and you know, the voice gave it away, but the hole closed right up after they pulled the button out of there, where he had to breathe through his neck instead of his mouth. But he was quite a character, that guy.
He was a good football player.
He was. When he met the wife of Praxis, was it? The guy, the bodybuilder that didn't last too long there. He had a hell of a body on
Mr. Universe,
Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
Praxis. Well, as soon as Pillman met, Brackett came to the house, and one of my employers was, kind of a, three-quarters gay and about, maybe equally Jewish, but that's besides the point. But he ran up to get a cousin of his, who's a billionaire, to see Brackett. And he brings this little billionaire down who's now dead, but they own the biggest Hollywood studio in California right now. The independent Hollywood. They bought out Francis Ford Coppola, but they were friends of ours. And this guy, they were amazed that it practiced his bill. But meanwhile, Pillman's looking at his wife and saying, it reminded me of like Robert, what's his name? Tony, the guy from Scarface, that was Al Pacino, yeah. He said,
Tony
wife hasn't been fucked in a month, Pillman wanted to screw Brackett's wife. He says, he hasn't fucked her in a month. I can just tell the way she's looking at me and all that. And, he's probably more in love with himself. And a lot of bodybuilders are very precious and semi-detached. But I felt bad for Brackett's. Didn't Savio Vega or some guys kick the shit out of him in the dressing room after he finished a match on what he did?
I don't
that,
know.
I didn't hear that.
I definitely did.
He was one of the best built guys in the world at the time. I mean, it's pretty, and to be wanting to wrestle is admirable, because a lot of these bodybuilders can't wrestle and don't want to wrestle. The last thing on their mind, they're going to bruise one of their big bulging muscles or something, or get the shit scared out of them or beat out of them, But you know, most bodybuilders are very selfish.
Brackett was a bodybuilder.
Yeah, he was Mr. Olympia and Mr. Universe and Mr. Europe and Mr. Everything.
Yep.
But that didn't stop Pillman. Pillman's ready to, you know, if he had to go toe-to-toe with him to take the wife, he would have. But, you know, at the same time, Pillman's fairly law-abiding and respectful of fellow wrestlers. But he certainly didn't pull his punches with me that day and talking about the hungry wife. But it should have been somewhat true. I mean, I sort of suspect it was true. And that is the case kind of in a lot of situations where the bodybuilder is more in love with himself than he is with his spouse.
Yeah, that's,
that's another failed.
I was gonna say that's another failed gimmick. Brackets didn't last too long.
No, I mean we would have made him a superstar in Calgary. He would have been a, like, my dad could take these guys and put them with the right people, like the Stomper. My dad would, convince Archie that this guy. And Archie just wouldn't necessarily want to put him over.
It said that in 1999, it said he competed on the Canadian independent circuit under his real name, wrestling promotions such as Stampede Wrestling.
Yeah.
That
was the idea. That's the beauty of wrestling. That doesn't cost anything. You don't have to fly somebody in at great expense and guarantee a huge wage and pick up hotel tabs and stuff. When you when you come up with a good angle, good matchmaking, or you get a guy like the Stomper to give a guy like Brack his confidence and make him look like a killer, like you could whip Archie the Stomper's ass if you wanted. That's the beauty of wrestling. Like when my dad fought Abdul and he fought the Stomper, Abdul was confident. He didn't have any fear of my dad whatsoever because he knew my dad regarded him as a top draw and, you know, top box office. The Stomper, who had already got, when Archie Goldie, the Stomper, was 16, he was a big kid. He played junior football and he was challenging all the wrestlers, and our Canadian champion, Dave Rule, said, I can beat all these guys. I can beat your champion. And the fans are saying, what's the matter, Stu? Are you afraid of, you know, let him, you know, what are you afraid of? He's going to beat your champion on. So my dad finally, after Archie was like week after week after week trying to almost jump in the ring or saying you could beat this guy, that guy at ringside, my dad took him out in the back and said, listen, asshole, you know, a lot of these guys could probably rip your head off. You don't know that. I mean, there's guys in the preliminary matches that have kind of slowed down, retired. They don't do much, but they're killers. They manhandle you. That's their whole life was to submission wrestling and stuff. Anyway, Archie finally got his day in the gym at the Dungeon, and my dad just mauled him. My dad stretched him and, you know, stuck his head up his ass and bounced him down the stairs, you might say. He did anything and everything he felt like to Archie. He wrung Archie out. Archie was scared, shitless, you might say. And it took him 5 years to come back. In that time, he had married and his wife had committed suicide. And he told my dad he had found God and he had seen the light, and he just wanted to be a worker. He didn't, you know, he appreciated my dad's, you know, submission ability and wrestling, you know, but he said, I just, and again, my dad was unmerciful. My dad stretched him worse this time than he did the last time. It's funny, I see a guy wearing a Mitch Pulley t-shirt walking by here in Value Village, new Canadian, you know, but anyway. Archie got broken in Kansas City then, and when he came back another 5 years later, he had lost 15 years of wrestling that he could have actually been making money, but he was so afraid of my dad, he disappeared for 10 years. If you handle Archie the right way, he would make a guy look like $1 million, especially if it was one of his guys that he had found or he had worked with in Kansas City or the Maritimes. He told my dad, hey, Stu, this guy will work. This guy's box office with me. I'll make you money with him. And he'd bring the guy in and give him a few smashes, give Archie, his usual cannon fodder. And then Archie'd work a program with this guy for 3 weeks. And that was then it's not the guy leaves. The guy's made. you could throw him in with any of your other lesser heels or a tag match and all. Once Archie wrestled the guy, he was gold. The guy that Archie wrestled, whether he won or lost, he was now top dog. I mean, they had that image that the fans would accept them in any major situation. They were no longer so they got the past. They didn't stop at go. They went right to jail, you might say, or they went right to heaven. You know, they were top dogs and didn't have to waste a lot of time. Maybe they should have had more time in the gym and more basics. But basically, when they're big and they got a body or something, then they kind of live on that and they pick up all the extra knowledge and stuff kind of with their experience. You might call it the hard way instead of spoon-feeding them. They get it on their own. But, you know, they paid their dues in the gym, weightlifting and stuff, you know, powerlifting or bodybuilding or whatever.
So many different wrestlers came into the territory. Fans that probably, you know, never even heard of some of these names, and some names they probably heard of. I mean, Abdullah the Butcher, Bad News Allen, Hercules Alea, let's see, Steve Ayala. Blackman, Leo Burke, the Cobra, the King.
Yeah, the
whole
Burke family wrestled for us, and a lot of them broke in, like Leo broke in from scratch with us. The Beast had wrestled a little bit before that, but like Michelle Martel brought in, Ricky Martel, the Beast brought in Leo, and he was Batman to start with, and he wore, you know, he had a Batman outfit, and I don't think we were weighing 180 pounds at the time, but he really caught on good, yeah. And the Batman TV series with Bruce, with those two guys, Bop, Bam, Bish, Bash, and all that stuff, that was a big hit in those days. It was on, I'd be just leaving for the wrestling when it was starting to come on TV, and it wasn't much, years later, I'd sometimes want to watch Dallas instead of going to the wrestling. But anyway, Leo Burke and
Dallas was a good hit in the 80s. And I'm also noticing that there were quite some Japanese wrestlers like Hiroshi Hase and of course Mr. Sakurada and Saito and Mr. Hito, I should say.
Yeah.
Those guys, and then of course the great, they had, you know, the great Gamma and Dory Funk Jr., Big Daddy Ritter, Jake Roberts, some big names, Dr. D. David Schultz, Rhonda Singh, Brian Pillman, of course, some good talent, the Bushwhackers, those Bushwhackers, you know, those guys, Les Dorton, some good names in this, some good cards and stuff, What was it like being a promoter's son, working for your dad, or under your dad, I should say?
Well, it was different for in the wrestler's eyes. It was always good. Like when I went to other territories, they'd apologize for me, anytime I wasn't getting my hand raised and that kind of thing, But as far as the fans went, they didn't. It didn't matter. They'd be more impressed if I was wrestling at the time. Later I did start to wrestle, but when I was just a promoter's son, as a kid, it didn't mean much. I mean, some girls were calculating enough to know that there was money there. You see, my dad, his house was a multi-million-dollar 21-room mansion with a view and a carriage house and all that, and he always had a fleet of Cadillacs and limousines around him. My dad would, he had a thing about shoes. Like my mother told me at one time in the dirty 30s. He was looking in a garbage can and he was taking out a pair of shoes that somebody had discarded, and they were better than the ones he was wearing. And some guys, get out of there, you dirty bum, you son of a bitch, get out of my garbage or I'll shoot you or something. And my mother said that registered in my dad's head, and he'd always get deals on it too, like some football players would order, four pair of alligator shoes, and then they'd get cut from the team and they'd leave and they'd put a deposit on them, and the shoe guy would, my dad would be in there looking at something, and they'd say, "Hey, Stu, are you interested in these? I got like 5 pair of them, and they're all, I give them to you for half price or something, or, Stu would make a deal, if I take all 5, how much?" Then he'd give them to somebody like Abdullah, who likes alligator skin. A lot of us would get them custom made in Japan, where they could get them the exact foot. Some guys had huge feet, really wide feet. Like Andre had to buy, he had to order everything special, custom made. But, my dad liked exotic leather shoes, whether it was, a shell cordovan, which is made out of the inside leg muscle of a horse. It's a very, very smooth leather. It's not just like inside the, fighting seal skin and camel skin and antelope and sea turtle and crocodile and armadillo and anteater and goat skin, kangaroo skin, whale skin, elephant skin, rhinoceros skin, shark skin, eel skin. My dad had them all. All those different weird exotic leathers. And
I was going to say, this is the Heart Grapevine number 17, and this is Mike Farrar, and I'm joined with Smith and with Heart, and we're talking about Calgary Stampede. And a dream match for me, if people always say, if you had to make a dream match and you were a booker, what would you book? You know what match I would love to see? The Heart Boys versus the Von Erich Boys.
That would be great. I'd love to do that. That'd be a fantastic match. I wouldn't care who won or who lost. The fans wouldn't either. It'd just be so good that that would be fantastic drawing, and the wrestling would be very much appreciated as well. If you came up with a good finish, you'd keep that going for 3 or 4 returns.
Yeah, I mean,
something really good like that, you should never, never pop the bubble.
Like,
just always keep bringing it back, even once a year, bring it back.
They won't
gag on
wrestling.
It because if it's really good each time, they that's all they really want, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's something like today, there's a thing on the WWE Network where they have like collection of old matches, and they do a great job. And I watched the match for World Class Championship Wrestling, where it was like Kerry Von Erich or David Von Erich versus Ric Flair. And a lot of people didn't realize that years ago, the champion, the NWA champion, would come to different territories and defend his belt against the top guys.
That's right. And, guys like Terry Funk.
Did that ever happen with you guys, with Calgary?
That happened all the time. Every Stampede week, we'd book the world champion, and we get the bigger building. Now there's a third building, the Saddle Dome, for the hockey team. But we ran there once and lost our ass. I mean, it's like ridiculously expensive to rent, just open the doors, and it's like, probably $100,000 nowadays. But guys like Von Erich's fighting the Hearts would do very well. Joey Funk was one guy that my dad really liked. He went out of his way to make your guy look invincible. Like, he would lose by such a hustler in a pool room or something. He'd lose by such a small degree that the challenger almost thought he could beat him, and the fans were had tears in their eyes, even if it was a villain fighting. So they have just enough high spots and false finishes that they think they are that the stomper Brett or whoever was the challenger had it that time, or had it there another time. It was just the last second the guy would come to or kick out or get the ropes and get a break or something. But Jory Funk Jr. was one of the best guys for that. Terry was pretty good. Harley Race was very, very good for that. Harley didn't care who he would even put Bruce over. My brother Bruce, at one point he said that. He said, "Why didn't we do this? I would have wrestled you." Like, it was some deal where they had to screw up everything, and somebody didn't show up, and they ended up putting Andre in against Harley. And Andre was really excited and upset. He came in late for one thing. His flight was late. And he didn't have a chance to relax at a hotel or anything, or, you know, he had to get right to the wrestling, and then he's wrestling somebody else's. The fact that he's wrestling Harley Race for the World Championship didn't really matter to him too much. But
Andre was larger than life, as they say. And you were just talking about guys that had to have custom-made shoes and boots and stuff. I bet you Andre was one of them. His foot was huge.
Yeah, size 24.
Wow, size 24.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That's twice as big as my shoes, you know.
Yeah, it's a big thing. But I tell you what, Smith, it was fun reminiscing and going back and forth with you on different stories, and it's like tales from the Calgary Stampede era. You'll never see wrestling like that again. There's no way. You'll never get it. But you have all these memories, and of all the people that you've seen over the years, and all the friendships that you made. And that's why this show is such the Heart Grapevine is such a unique show, because you could tell the fans that only like the WWE or only like TNA or whatever. You could tell them how it was years ago in Calgary.
Yeah. And you never know when it couldn't, the people that train those guys are still around, the knowledge is still there. But,
if there's other wrestlers that you can get that used to wrestle for your dad.
They got some great British wrestlers.
They want to come on your show. That's awesome. That'd be great. We could talk to them about Calgary days.
Sure. There's a lot of good guys that are training in the WWE that are, British wrestlers, and they're pretty good. But I went over to England. All my brothers and I went over to England and wrestled at different times there in Germany and all that. And they really didn't have villains were like so mild compared to our vicious, brutal the Stomper Abdullah. They hardly ever had blood in England. Half of them would be accidental blood. It was a family show. Like, they charged such small amount. The admission was so cheap. It was cheaper to, you couldn't pay a babysitter. You might as well bring your kids. It was that reasonable. And then with all the kids in the audience, you didn't want to have too much nasty violence and blood and guts and all that. I mean, it was a whole different thing. It was sort of strictly entertainment and a lot of light wrestling. They reverse this and you reverse it and then I reverse it and blah, blah, blah. And they don't even hardly make any noise in the ring. And, their rings weren't that good and they weren't that big either. So, if you got slammed on one of those rings, you felt it pretty good, no matter how you landed. They didn't have much suspension in them. They were so short that they didn't have any give in them either. If you got a really big ring, it's got way more spring in the middle than a little tight ring that's only 14 feet square. You're landing, hard everywhere. And, they had cable ropes and this and that, and a lot of them were boxing rings with, extra ropes and hardly any suspension. They're like wrestling on pavement. So, but anyway, they did much as good as the British wrestling was. It needed when big guys like Billy Robinson came into Calgary, or Davey Boy, or Dynamite, big or small. They needed with all their fancy moves. He needed a big, vicious stalwart like Bad News or Jim Neidhart, who basically was a babyface. But they needed a Stomper or a Stasiak or a Koloff or a Jerry Graham or somebody, a big American guy to do their things on. And then when he took over, it meant something. And, you know, they appreciate the British guy for all his maneuvers and his sportsmanship. And
the one thing I liked about the British Bulldog, Davey, is his power, his strength. He could pick the Warlord up and make the Warlord look like he's got a baby in his hands.
Yeah, he was very strong, Davey. He worked out hard in Dynamite as well.
Yeah, both guys were great to the W. You know, both guys were great in wrestling, and they did a lot for wrestling. I know. I remember when the British Bulldogs won the titles. I remember Ozzy Osbourne was there, and he said the British Bulldogs forever. And it was something to see. It was something to see a rock and roll guy like Ozzy Osbourne, you know, at a wrestling match, and he was in the corner of the British. It was so funny to see him there. But years later,
a lot of rock stars liked wrestling. Like Pete Best was the Beatles. His father was a wrestling promoter. Best right in promotions later became Joint Promotions, where most of my family worked for them.
That's cool.
Joe Cocker liked wrestling. Joe Cocker was a big wrestling fan, and Elvis Presley loved wrestling. He liked lady wrestlers, and he was extremely fond of Penny Banner. He took her out about 10 times, and
I never heard of her before.
Penny Banner has a book out. You should try and read it, called Banner Days. It's her life story, and it's full of pictures.
I read a book about Mildred Burke one time. That was pretty good.
Yeah. When I saw Billy Corgan, I gave him a canceled check from Mildred Burke. And this was like two performances ago when he was in Toronto with Marilyn Manson. And he said, "Are you a mind reader?" He said, "I'm just halfway through Mildred's book, and here you give me a check from 1954 from your dad to Mildred." And then I said, "Well, I got two more at home. I got one from Gene Kaniski for $1,000, and I got one for Dick Hutton for about $1,400 when they were world champions." And I can't find them. They were hidden. I put them inside a book, or I don't know. They're in my nest somewhere in my bachelor pad, but I gotta find those for Billy, but you know, just.
She was pretty. I'm looking. The name of the book is called Banner Days, and for anybody.
Yeah.
This is not. I wouldn't be buying this book. This is too expensive for me. It says $200. I'm looking at the thing. That's $200. Actually,
$200
I
for Banner Days.
Yeah.
My sister Diana's got my copy. I'll ask her for it back. It was a gift to me, you know. And speaking of which, did you ever read Diana's book, Under the Mask?
No, I never did. I never read Diana's book.
Find those two checks for those two canceled checks for Billy Corgan, I gave him Diana's book, but it was already given to somebody else. Had somebody else's name in it. And
How did Diana's book do, by the way? You know, we should try to get Diana on.
It was selling like it was flying off the shelf. And when Martha Owens' widow read it, and Brett read it, who was very much in Martha's court in those days, they took issue with a lot of things Diana said. It was a very poorly edited book. But anyway, when Diana appeared on a Canadian talk show, like with the Mike Bullard show, and it was syndicated, it was a really popular show. But I told some of my kids, I said, "Your Aunt Diana," or my, you know, I said, "Watch Mike Bullard tonight. Diana's going to be on and all that." And they watch it, and they went out and bought the book. And in the book, there's all kinds of stuff in there about me screwing some girlfriend's mother or something, which wasn't the case. Mm. And all kinds of stuff, Brett, different infidelities with Brett. And, the, you know, he between Martha and Brett, they were so offended that they had the book shut down. They threatened to sue and this and that and all that. And
I know. I read your
like
brother Bruce. I read your brother Bruce's book, Straight from the Heart. That was a good one.
Yeah. Well, one of these days I'll finish. I work on my book every day, even if, you know, and it's so disheveled. I got pieces here, I got pieces there, I got parts of it in Ontario and parts of it in Hawaii and parts of it in Puerto Rico. But I got to put it all together and get it, you know.
And you,
get
gotta,
it, I mean,
and you have to include the Andre the Giant story in your book, too. You got to tell some Andre the Giant stories in your book. And don't forget in the top of the page you write to Mike, thank you for everything, buddy.
Yeah, for sure, Mike. No problem.
You know, like, you know where acknowledgement people that I want to acknowledge. I want to acknowledge Mike Ferrara. He helped me out.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Oh, man. I tell you, I'm having a fun time with the Heart Grapevine. I love working on your show. I love your show. I think you're a great guy. I want to read Banner Days, and I want to read your sister's book. And one of these days, we should try to get Diana. You should try to get her to come on.
Diana would be happy to come on, I'm sure. I had Harry lined up, but somehow he missed the flight, or he said he'd rather do it another time. He was tired or something, but get Diana and Harry.
I seen Harry's calves. They are huge, his calves.
Yeah, he is big boy.
He's a big boy. He takes after his father. Very
he got a real arsenal on him. He's well trained. You know, I mean, he's not just big.
Man, that's awesome.
He's a big friendly kid, but he's got.
I would love to see
training.
Him back in the. I would love to see him back in the WWE.
Yeah.
I would love to see him make money.
Mike, I'll do you one better. I'll give you a wrestling lesson. I'll give you some physical. I'll give you the physical side of it as well as the verbal. I won't hurt you. I'll just give you an idea of how leverage can be very effective.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it. I'll read it in the book.
okay.
I'll read it in the book. But I gotta tell you though, it's been fun tonight talking to you and picking your brain about the hearts and everything, and hopefully soon your next guest in the upcoming weeks you'll get that on the help side for all the fans out there that listen to the show. What's going on with your health? How's everything going?
It's going good, and it's all touch wood, you know. Like I every day I feel good, and I can live with how I feel forever right now. But it's not to say it can't reverse itself, because it did that last time. I get these injections that last 6 months, but they sometimes will wear. They you know, everybody's different. Everybody's different size, different metabolism, different diet, different activities, and all that. And probably about the third or fourth month, it started to reverse. It's just not like it started to fail, and you're sort of at a, you're improving, and now you're at a, like, 75% recovery, and you just stay there. No, it started to go back gradually, like, worse. Soon it was like, I'm feeling like I'm almost ready to die again, you know, I guess, is, you know, and so then he gave me a booster shot. To tide me over till I got the main one, the biannual shot, and they give me some kind of synthetic estrogen, you know, because they're killing all my testosterone. That's how they fight prostate cancer, and the prostate cancer spreads to quite a few different bones now. But they said the only main spot is my left hip, but otherwise, their testosterone annihilation has kept the other attacks on other bones, like my collarbone, my ribs, my spine, my shoulder blades, was very minimal. It was just barely visible on the X-ray. So, it's all touch wood. I don't know where, as far as I know, I'm feeling great. And I'm functioning fine and all that. And I'm just starting to put some of the 69 pounds. I lost damn near 70 pounds in about a year. Went from 240 to 171.
Wow, yeah, you were saying that you were losing weight, too. Yeah.
Yeah,
you said that.
Yeah, well, I'm gaining it now. My pants are starting to fit and stuff again.
Well, that's good. That's very good. I mean, I'm glad to hear that. It's good. I'm very glad to hear that you're coming along and you're feeling good and you're doing good, because that's what it's about. You know, it's about your life. Hey, you know what I wanted to ask you before I wrap this up? What's going on with Frenchie Martin?
He's still alive, according to Carl LeDuc, whom I spoke to today, and he's hoping
I'll
call him back.
Get...
I wish. Yeah, maybe I'll see if I can get him to. He'd be good with the LeDuc because they both knew each other quite well. Frenchie's not going to be here for. He's enjoying the last of his life right now, so God bless him. And
I don't know, when we talked to him last, when we talked to him last time, he didn't sound like a man that was dying.
No, he didn't. That's much information I had. And I know Ricky Martel and Pat Patterson went to see him together, and they didn't seem to have any worry about him dying before they got there, but... maybe someone pushed the panic button.
I'm laughing because I'm thinking back when we interviewed him and how clear the belly was. I mean, I was like in shock. I was expecting like somebody to be out of it, but no, he was ready to go. So that's the guy.
I just heard that Bobby Heenan is up and around. Like, he's pretty sick. He's got his whole mouth and everything. He's pretty fucked
up. Well, Bobby Heenan,
Bobby
Heenan.
I heard he was at a sign of meet and greet on recently. So I like Bobby. He's a great guy. He's a hell of a, he's a quite an intelligent person. And, I bless him. I hope he's around. I'd like to interview him, too, if I could.
Yeah, I don't know. About his speech, I heard a lot of bad things about his speech, so I don't know how great it is. Bobby would be
I don't
great
know. Maybe he's only
yeah.
good for he might only yeah he might be only good for signing autographs and getting pictures taken. He might not be able to speak. He maybe could write or
I don't
something.
Know.
But if he's on a radio,
I know Bobby. I know. God bless Bobby. I remember Bobby getting thrown around the ring. Like, he would take these bumps. Like, you'd look at the manager and you'd take these big bumps. And I remember my friend one day, he used to say, why don't you take Bobby the Brain Heenan bumps? And I used to say, never. I would never let my feet leave the ground like that.
No.
Bobby's bumps looked like they were painful. Especially like when the Ultimate Warrior would put his hands on Bobby, it didn't look too pleasant,
No.
But anyway, no. so future guests coming up would be the LeDucs, you said, and we got to get Frenchie back on.
Yeah, the LeDucs are guaranteed. Other ones like Billy Graham, Superstar, and
Honky Tonk Man.
They got curfews. That's what I want to get. I know he's not in the greatest health, and the Honky Tonk Man claimed that he couldn't talk after a certain hour. He goes to bed early, and so if we can accommodate him,
Tuesdays I do a show at 12:00 p.m. We know that. So any other day, I could try to get we could try to do it. We could try to do it, maybe in the 1:00 our time hour or the 2:00 hour. We'll set it up. I mean,
Why don't you give me a call in between shows and I can reach you and stuff, because I don't even have your number offhand that I know of.
I'll give it to you. I'll give you my information offhand, and off the air, and I'll definitely not a problem, Smith. Definitely. But I want to thank you for doing this. I was going to say I want to thank you for doing this tonight. This is the Heart Grapevine, and it's on. This is number 17, your 17th show, and it's on Totally Driven Entertainment Network. I want to thank Bay Ragney for setting this whole thing up. You know, Bay introduced me to you, and I'll never forget Bay for that. Good guy. And, and stuff like that. So you want to close the show, we can close the show, sir.
Yeah, it was an impromptu show today. I had two guests planned that I canceled, and then Alma Johnson, who was going to do crapped out for some reason, and I hope I can do him another time. So I apologize to any of the fans that are sick and tired of hearing me, but if I was prepared to talk, I would have had a lot of things at my fingertips to talk about instead of just sort of off the top of my head. But, Mike, you put it, with your help, you might say we pulled it off, and there's always next time. And, I appreciate all the fans' comments and their support always. If it wasn't for the fans, there'd be no wrestling or no promoters. There'd be no Vince McMahon. So, God bless all the fans, and thank you too, Mike. And I look forward to
I want to say this speaking as a fan. And if it wasn't for you guys and your father, there would be no wrestling for us fans to watch. So it's a 50-50 proposition.
Yeah, I'd like all the fans out there to put their hands together and give fucking Stu Hart a big clap, a big applause. He deserves it. Thank you very much. Adios, Mike.
You got it. Adios. Oh, until we meet again, my friend. All right, that was Smith Hart, the Hart Grapevine, and now a little commercial time.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause. www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs. Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
Break your ass down to the ring. If you're a fan.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Wilkinson with TV Nation and Totally Driven Radio and Entertainment. Sadly, each year, approximately 3.6 million children become victims of child abuse. My latest ebook, Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, explores the long-lasting effects abuse can have on victims. Explore life after the abuse ends and how we cope with the tragedies of the past. Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect is available on Kindle for only 99 cents. And don't forget to check out my website, actingnotreacting.com, a common sense approach to teens in crisis. Let's work together and make this world a better place. And remember, stay driven.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs. Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400. Are you ready to be totally driven? Totally Driven Entertainment Network has a full lineup of shows dedicated to total entertainment. Starting on Mondays, we have the always relevant and often hilarious Hard Talk with Big Daddy and Big Booty Trudy. That's at 6 p.m. And at 11 p.m., go 8 flights up and get your mind right. Tuesdays at noon, Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira covers professional wrestling news, rumors, and one-of-a-kind interviews with professional wrestling performers and insiders. At 8 p.m., join Smith Hart of the legendary Hart Family Dynasty for the Hart Grapevine as he goes behind the scenes and shares his knowledge of the professional wrestling industry and some truly remarkable special interviews, too. Welcome to Hump Day, Wednesdays, 9:30 a.m., the Coco and Wee Wee Show asks the age-old question, who do you love, who do you shove? And at 8 p.m., the Give No F's Cosplay Variety Hour brings you the best in cosplay, comics, video games, and more. Thursday nights at 5 p.m., Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira returns to the airwaves to cover professional wrestling news, results, and more. At 8 p.m., Totally Driven Radio, the show that started it all, brings you the best in topical conversations, celebrity interviews, exclusive musical guests, and so much more. Your Friday night would be incomplete without a trip to Uncle Shawnee's Playground. Join Uncle Shawnee at 8 p.m. and prepare to be offended, but, you know, in a good way. At 10 p.m., don't forget the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour, bringing back the golden age of professional wrestling. Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., the Mojo Sports Show starts your weekend off with a healthy dose of sports mojo. Get the latest news, scores, results, and more every Saturday morning. At 9 p.m., Totally Driven Radio rocks. Bay Ragney unleashes his inner beast as he takes you on a heavy metal journey and looks at the music he thinks rocks. That brings us to Sunday morning, the perfect time for a big weenie. At 10 a.m., the Big Weenie Castanini Show goes live around the world. And ending the week at 9 p.m. on Sunday nights, join the TV Nation for your weekly dose of the Nerd Herd and talk all things comics, TV, movies, and pop culture. Remember, get driven, stay driven.